Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Hearts of LNP, brought to you by Late Night Poets at allpoetry.com. The group hosts shows every night of the week on a variety of topics to ensure that there is something for everyone to enjoy. And if you want to support our shows, we have anthologies available on Amazon, which boast a wonderful selection of poetry offered up by the poets of our group. And speaking of our poets, with the gracious permission of several of our members, I have brought a reading list tonight for your listening pleasure. I encourage you to come in, find a comfortable seat, and make yourself at home. Along with Versus Goliath, I am happily your host, Victoria Frost. Tonight, we're going to be celebrating not only late night poets, but also delving into the beautiful colors of fall, the way that the seasons change, the colors become more vibrant, that we get to watch the greens change from reds to golds, and sometimes to browns, and watch the leaves fall to the floor. It's a beautiful reminder of how life changes and continues on. That being said, it does remind me that for those of our poets who are listening, or any of our listeners, we do have a special contest going on this month. It actually started today, technically yesterday for our East Coast listeners. As of September 5th, we are going to be doing a gathering of golden leaves in celebration of this change of fall. It is a way for our members to get a few leaves of their own and maybe, just maybe, win a subscription to the Late Night Poets or the All Poetry website where our group is located. So if you're a listener and you are not on All Poetry, you are fully welcome to join the site, join the group, and participate in this contest. As long as you're a member by the end of the month, your hat is in the ring. There's a few ways to win points. One of the biggest ways, as always, is to participate in our radio shows, calling in, writing for our contest, submitting SoundClouds are always great ways, and those are going to get you your top points. We're also going to have, if you host contests, if you put them in the contest link of our group, you can get points. Putting a poem on the reading list gets you points. And then Kevin, who actually owns all of All Poetry, lets us know who's been commenting the most on the reading list. And so the top five of each week is also going to get points. And then, of course, we have front page picks, which if you're a member of All Poetry, that means you get a poem of yours featured on the front page. That will actually give you a whopping 15 points. But, of course, it's only one time a month. Be sure to check that out. That's going on right now, a gathering of golden leaves. It is posted on Fill My Eyes, All Poetry page, as well as mine, and Phil being the owner and matriarch of Late Night Poets. So super excited about that contest and super excited to get to delve into fall. So with that, I'd like to welcome Versus. How are you doing tonight, Versus?
I'm wonderful. Thank you for asking. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, you know, it is fall. Fall and winter are probably my two favorite seasons. And so I'm excited that we're in fall and excited that I get a three-day weekend, but there's no rest for the wicked, so I'll still probably be putting in a few hours of work. But I get to start my week hanging out with some friends, reading some amazing poetry, so I really can't complain. That's it.
Yeah.
That's all I got to say
agree.
About it. and we don't have any other callers.
I have a birthday in fall, so it's definitely one of my favorite seasons as well.
Well, now you're going to have to message me when your birthday is, because we don't do birthdays just by letting them slide by. So you're going to have to send that to me. I'm going to have to conspire. Deal?
Okay, deal.
Okay. All right. Well, we don't have anybody else who's joined our little reading list just yet today. So with that in mind, would you mind taking us to the first poem? I know you have one on the board, so you're always welcome to start off the show if you like.
I won't start off the show with my own poem, but I will start off with, if you don't mind reading it, Jean's poem, LNP. She's saying on the board that matriarch sounds so old. But it's such a nurturing and caring word.
Oh, so for those listening in, maybe for your first time or your second time, we do have a few ways to interact with the show when we're on the show. And one of those ways is to hang out in the group on allpoetry.com. You can interact with us live by putting up little comments, and it's a fun way to interact if you're not comfortable calling in just yet. And so Fill My Eyes said, "You saying I'm old, matriarch sounds so old." Matriarch just sounds regal. I mean, I could just call you the queen of LNP. So, you know, that or she's the, what is it, the hedge witch, the highest witch. Since we're into fall, we could pretend like we're a beautiful little coven. Not that we promote any sort of religious beliefs in this group. Everybody gets to come as they are, but having a little fun. She's just the big boss that you don't mess with. So hopefully that'll get her seal of approval. Start with her poem, I see, right?
Yes, indeed. She'll be posted up.
I love it. Okay, well, I'll take this. Hold on, she said something before I clicked. I've been referred to as Queen Bee a few times. Well, there we go. She's the Queen Bee. I like it. All right. So the Queen Bee wrote LNP. The most amazing poets reside in LNP. They write, they laugh, they sing. They're as warm as they can be. You don't take stuff from anyone. We protect what we call home. Sometimes we surely wander, and again we sometimes roam. So many found a home here, away from pettiness and disdain. So we offer out our open arms to those that seek the same. From my heart, to those that offer chatter, so much fun you do impart. For those that offer roleplay, you all blow me away. The storylines and twisting plots make me always want to play. To those that just stay idle, off waiting in the wings, I appreciate you each and every one for the poetry you bring. For those that fill the reading list for all of us each day, thank you for those gifts you bring in your tender sharing way. For each of you that comments, taking time to like or write, thanks for all the time you spend from all the poets you delight. For each and every parody that makes me laugh out loud, from every front page pick you earn, I applaud you because I'm proud. Keeping all the muse at play with every contest that you run, I want to thank you all for this. Yes, each and every one. Now for each and every radio host from the bottom of my toes, thanks for all the love you share with your poetry, smile, and prose. But most of all, I thank you for the family we've become. No matter sex, race, or country, LNP, I say, well done. And poem. This is my second time getting to read this, and I have goosebumps. I love it so much. First is, would you mind starting us off with your thoughts on this piece?
Absolutely. And that was a wonderful read. Thank you for it. I like how this is, first of all, structured and its rhyme scheme and everything. It's very fun, lighthearted, and it flows very well. And it captures the core of so much of what makes LNP LNP, light, you know, poets, late night poets, you know. So from all the different kinds of stories that are woven, the poetry and the music, like you made the song for the 007 contest by Rex and Pam. Like, there's a lot of effort that goes into everything that each of these poets is putting out there, even the ones that are sitting out in, you know, the wings, so to speak, where, I mean, I think there's so many different ways to interact with the group, but the reading list gets so packed. I've tried to go through it one time just to see how many I could comment on, like how much I could spend commenting, give at least some, you know, deep diving into them. And there was like, I think 50 or 60 poems, like maybe it was somewhere in between there, just all laid out. I had only gotten to like 13 and I was like, okay, I have to take a break. There's literally no way to fully appreciate all of these amazing poets that post up on the board. So I'm glad we have the show to kind of help to recognize and, you know, get them the attention they deserve. This is a great poem by Phil. Thank you very much for sharing.
That was such a beautiful comment. And you're right. Like, when you start to understand how deeply and how far reaching this group is, the way that this, that the poetry is, it's mind boggling because it's not just people talking in the group. It's not just a radio show that you can call into. It's not just contests that we run. It's not just celebrating one poet. It's all of this. It's the way that community comes together. It's appreciating the effort that people put into. And I mean, you're actually really good at this too. You kind of mentioned the song that I wrote for Rex for their Sunday Rhyme and Rhythm with Rex, which is the show preceding this one. Even like the SoundClouds that you've created and the artwork that you've done for, you know, other shows, there's all these beautiful ways in which poets come together and appreciate each other, you know? And there's been, we've talked about this before. I actually wrote a poem today called Mediocre. And it's kind of, it's satire in a way. But there was someone felt the need to go on it and comment, basically insulting me. No one I'd ever interacted with before. They just felt the need. And that's okay. Everybody gets to go and approach other poets the way that they want to. But in our group, we don't sit here and bring other poets down for the sake of lifting ourselves up, because we understand that all boats rise with the tide. And some boats might be kayaks and canoes, and some boats may be 42-foot Catalinas, and some boats may be $3 million yachts. It doesn't mean that anybody's greater than anyone else. We're all just in a different place. We all have different skills. We all have different purposes. And LNP does a beautiful job of celebrating the way that we all come together. And so I think that's what I find amazing about this. And this poem, coming from the Queen Bee, coming from Phil, it also shows you the heart that's helped create this community, because it is. It's a community. It's a family. And, you know, we choose to lift each other up, not bring each other down. Everybody can improve. Everybody can do better. But there's no reason that we need to do better by dragging everyone else to the bottom of the ocean to drown. So I think it's just a beautiful piece. I think it just gives me goosebumps, because it just shows the love that she has. Because if you ever get a chance to interact with Phil, she never takes full credit for the group, because it's a team effort. This community wasn't done by one person. It was done by everyone. And that just shows the beauty of LNP, you know? So beautiful poem, great rhyme scheme. I love the way it flows. It's definitely a favorite of mine. And thank you, Phil, as always, for letting us share your work. So with that, and I want to read this. Phil sent this to me. She goes, Late Night Poets is dedicated to the celebration of creative minds. We are a welcoming forum for poems, stories, art, and idea. We encourage absolute beginners, seasoned pros, and anyone in between. All we ask is that everyone be treated with respect. Late Night Poets is a reflection of our community spirit, a place to share, develop, and reveal the best parts of ourselves. We welcome ideas and views. It is great to think highly of yourself, as long as you are not looking down on others while doing so. And I have goosebumps again, because that's what it is. So, LNP, I love it. I love Phil. I love everybody there. So thank you, Phil, for this poem, for this group, for all the beauty that you bring. And with that, Versus, would you like to take us to a new place, or did you have any other thoughts? Because I do love hearing your thoughts.
Yeah, I'll take you somewhere in a second. I was thinking about when you were mentioning the comment that you unfortunately had to delete. Not that it necessarily correlates, but how when there's that perfectionism in people, sometimes they have those kind of comments for themselves. And again, I didn't see the comment on your poem, but, and so some people express more criticism, like trying to be helpful, not knowing how to be constructive with it. And I mean, honestly, it's really nice to receive constructive criticism as well as the, you know, uplifting criticism, because sometimes you don't see those ways you could make your poetry perhaps read a little bit more easily or be easier on the eyes. And so it is kind of one of those balances, but most people will seek out constructive criticism, or, you know, you should at some point to try to take yourself to those higher levels, so to speak, of poetry, if you so wish. But Yeah, it is really beautiful, all the comments and stuff that I receive from LNP poets. Always uplifting. Just, as I'm saying it, it's a comment full of love and everything. It's like, I am. So,
well,
it's,
and that's the beauty. And I love that you say that, because you're right. You know, as poets, we always should seek to improve. And that's the great thing, though, about LNP is, like, it's easy to give constructive criticism, but it's also an understanding of, like, some people aren't there yet, you know? And I think that's where LNP is really cool, because I can go to other people and be like, and I did it, in fact, even with you, when I wrote that song, because I have performance anxiety, which is why I rarely feature my own work. Because I'm always like, oh, no, you're our biggest critic. But, you know, I was able to go to you with the song that I wrote and get feedback. And, you know, even though it was like, you know, one of the comments like that I talked to where I was just like, well, I think I'm a little flat on one of the notes and I'm seeing it. Or, you know, I think my voice is overpowering the background music. It was that beauty of being able to work through and see where things could be improved, welcoming environment. It was not about someone putting me down just to put me down. It was genuine constructive feedback and criticism. But LNP also recognizes not everybody is always there. And so sometimes it's just knowing your audience. So I think that was a beautiful insight, because you're right. I do think that some people, and all of us really in our own ways, seek out that which we desire. Sometimes we don't do it effectively, but we seek out that which we desire. So I think that was really insightful and a beautiful addition to the conversation. Thank you, Persis.
Well, thank you for sharing that. That it was great to hear your voice. It was like a secret before it actually got to be aired type of a deal, you know. I get an insider look.
I mean, it might have been like the only look anybody ever saw, because, you know, I hate performing.
I'm pretty sure it got played on the radio.
It did get played, so now it's an infamy, because it's hidden in the backlog of Late Night Poet Blog Talk. For better or worse.
Somebody will find it. One of these days, when you least expect it, somebody will find it.
Oh, no. Hey, Phil, you know how to delete these things, right? No.
I think it has a SoundCloud.
Are we looking at Rex's? Yes.
We are.
All right, let me get this one up. We do have it. There it is. Okay, here we go.
I got an invite from that dipper glowing bright, and that seven majoris was burning. The ladle it gleams from her flowing streams, a galaxy of souls in their churning. We walk late in the night, these poets of insight, breathing solar winds, we fly freely. When the radio waves call, come one and come all, from the helm dear Ursa is steely. Come one and come all when the radio does call, as we ring that bell twice nightly. After midnight's verse is a comet tail burst, where a voice can walk that rope tightly. From the heavens above come those sounds of love, as long into the morn we are sharing. There are giggles and laughs and musical paths, where the she-bear is seafaring. Now light out a cheer where those waves are clear, and that radio begs you to calling. For that mic it stands strong, as all do belong to the LNP cosmos so sprawling. Gray dove lunar rays stream incoherent arrays, as rhymed phasia rocks the nation. In a wise man's laws, laureled harmony explores, and tears fill my eyes with elation.
Oh my goodness. I have the biggest, stupidest, shit-eating grin on my face right now. Oh, I love this so much. Not only did we get to hear almost like a sea shanty from Rex, but it's so clever. So a few fun things is that Incoherence, Luna, Gray Eyes, Boo You Wild Dove. We've even got Fill My Eyes, a hint of Laurent in there. They are all hosts or were hosts on the radio show. And it's this beautiful unity of the way that the radio is brought together and the way that that each person brings their own uniqueness. While all of us have poetry shows and we have similar layouts and contexts, and the way that the shows run, you know, read a poem, talk about it, interact with each other, have some fun. Every host brings things differently. So, you know, we have different topics. So I have a Wednesday, every other Wednesday special called The Black Lace Diaries, as some people know, and it looks at the less vanilla side of intimacy. So, you know, sometimes we look at shibari ropes and sometimes we look at wax play and role playing and just different things. But I love this because it shows the way in which people are pulled together, the way in which the radio can be this fun and beauty that just kind of offers up the ability to have imagination and inspiration and to get feedback and to get insights and just all the beautiful ways that it all comes together. And then again, the really fun mixing and reminiscing of late night poets in with the host's names. And it's just great. I'm sitting here with goosebumps and I had so much fun. Rex was teasing me after the song that I wrote. He was like, I'm never going to sing a song again. I was like, no, Rex, you have to sing a song. So I am so glad that he sung this song because it totally just made my night. What did you think, Versus?
I agree. And I was applauding. I would just happen to be on mute. He sang it wonderfully too. I was noticing, yeah, all the different notes of aphasiana and Gray Dove. I guess that might have been her name before, but it also reminded me of Gray Wolf. And I don't know if it was just prescience or it's because I chose such a name that just goes with poetry, but after Midnight's verse, I was like, even a nod to me a year ago, yes. Totally different. but yeah, I like how even while appreciating all that is ONP, it's still, like, it sits well as a poem freestanding. And we, again, have when the radio waves call, come one and come all from the Deer Helm. Dear Ursa as Steely. We had, Mother Bee before, or Mama Bee, or Queen Bee, it was. Now
Queen
we
Bee.
Have
mm-hmm.
Mother Bear, yeah. So that's another sort of moniker that Fill My Eyes can wear. She's Mama Bear. yeah, it's a great imagery throughout even... and it just goes through everything so nicely of like the midnight sky and what's going on. So yeah, it was a beautiful poem and a great read. Sing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It was just, it's so fun. And again, it's like, I think what's so beautiful about this is that LNP gives this opportunity to explore things. You know, Rex doesn't always sing for his pieces. We've gotten to see him a few times where he might sing. Sometimes he just speaks. But it gives us the opportunity to just kind of hear people as they are. It shows playfulness. It shows fun. And people don't have to be great just to be appreciated. And it is kind of like this magical solar sparking of imagination and thought where people just get to come and be, and we're not going to judge you for it. Be you sing as great as Rex or greater or worse than, you know, it's just a place where we just want to hear you and have you as you are, nothing more. And I feel like this really kind of captured that, the enjoyment of the crew with the encouragement that this show and this group bring. So, yeah, I love it. I love it. And yes, versus Rex knew, he knew that you were going to be a part of the team, and that's how your name got in there. That's the truth, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah. I can see prescience, and, you know, it's good to know that there's others out there.
Yes. All right, where do you want to take us to now?
Since it's up there, and it kind of is a nice in-between, this is from our show on Time, and it's a poem by me called Roosting Reflection. Since the days of sheep crying for family, it was known that there was no peacock within. No golden feathers, eyed plumage, rainbow sea. These irises focused on those slimy arms moving. Since when do people leave children to go sightseeing? Bypassers whisper about the freckled mess sleeping, unsure of how to remedy the situation, all due to early onset acro and agoraphobia. Anxiety waxes and wanes like moon cycles, quarter full days where a minute voice underlying those glass half-filled nights, perfect for creativity, almost overflowing cups when struggles start, crave those evenings of renewal, dark activity. Tiptoe outside and dance under stars, as euphoric a sensation as dogs chasing cars, so far away, reaching for the beautiful sky's scars. All washes away in these torrential rains. No more worrying about bloody dirt stains. Wounds leaking flow to daisies' ground veins. They bloom like the seeping words of pain. Red, white, pink, purple, a land ocean of color. Field of glory, the radical difference of life adored. Those light rays of many wavelengths hit inner core. Remind this author of the minuscule moments lived for. Mental warriors dressed in ironclad submarines muster on multiple souls, anger of hurtful fiends. Still, all arrows point to time as solution to sanguine poets' thoughts embossed from situations preened. May not be a peacock, golden eagle, cardinal or raven, but these wings feel the wind and know all things will mend. And boom.
I'm gonna reread your poem as I am speaking because I have thoughts and I need to reread it to have fully these thoughts. So the first thing that I'm kind of blown away by is that you have seeing the end with the first verse. You have the peacocks, the golden feathers, the rainbow plumage, which you speak about in many ways with the peacock, the golden eagle, the cardinal, and the raven. At the very end. But something that really sticks with me is that you are understanding that sometimes we are not these great beasts. Sometimes we're just a rooster or a chicken or something so far more mundane that people don't always play at. And I have that thought because you have roosting reflection and the very first few words, since the days of sheep crying for family. It was known there was no peacock within, no golden feathers, eye plumage, rainbow sea. We do not all come from greatness, a family that is small. And it kind of reminds me of the Big Bang Theory. Sheldon in the Big Bang Theory is this genius, but he comes from humble beginnings. And so it is, in a way, this first verse is setting it up as this idea of, I come from mundane stock, but I have thought, and it allows us to look at it, not in the idea of comparing it to greatness, not with this expectation of what we would expect from a peacock, but what might we expect from a rooster, from a chicken? And in that, we take ourselves down from this judgmental place, and we get to see the beauty and the complexity of your thoughts. These irises focused on those slimy arms. When do people leave children to go sightseeing? Bypassers whisper about freckled mess weeping, unsure of how to remedy the situation, all due to early onset acro and agoraphobia. So this line speaks to me, of possibly personal trauma. But it's also a hard call on society because so often we are willing to judge. I was in the store with my eldest and she was having a hard day. And I believe that my kids get to have a hard day when they're having a hard day. They're complete tiny human beings with their full own thoughts and feelings. And some days they're just having a hard day. But unlike me, who's had over 30 years to figure out how to handle my emotions appropriately, she's 4. Like she's got maybe 2 years of figuring out how to start controlling these things. And it's not perfect. It's not great, especially because 2 of those years have been stuck in COVID. So social skills are sometimes lacking. And yet, even as adults, we often will bypass these children's and their feeling. And in that scenario with my daughter, there were people who were looking at me thinking that, you know, oh my God, how could she allow her child to cry on the floor? And it's like, what am I going to do? Throw her in the cart and have her scream bloody murder and have people think I'm kidnapping her? Like, you know, or scream and yell at her and then she hides her emotions. We so often think we have the answers as adults. And yet so many times we find out that we don't, that we don't know what to do in situations. We don't know where the boundaries lie because we have these ideas of what people should do and how things should work. And so when you are confronted with perhaps a child who is crying because they've been left behind because of this acro and agoraphobia, the fear of being around so many people, and so the family has left, it doesn't fit in line with what we think. Anxiety waxes and wanes like moon cycles, quarter full days where a minute voice underlying those glass half-filled nights, perfect for creativity, almost overflowing cups when struggles start, crave those evenings of renewal, dark activity. As someone who has anxiety, I won't lie, yesterday was a really, really bad day. It was like anything that could go wrong did go wrong. And at the end of the day, I went and had a drink. It was one of those moments where my anxiety was so overrun that I needed something to help calm, which was a glass of vodka sitting out under the moon, just kind of being. And this verse reminds me of that. It's the way in which our uncertainty as even a child can affect our adulthood. The way in which we understand that as much as we think we have our anxiety, depression under control, it will sometimes be easier and sometimes it will be worse. And sometimes we'll have that little voice in the back of our head that we can resist. And sometimes it's screaming in our ear. And we just need something to make it numb. And sometimes when we finally have got it numb, we can think clearly. And it's in those moments we start grasping the whispers. Even if they are the dark whispers, they're those whispers that allow us to get our words down onto paper. Because in many ways, writing can be like a release of demons. You are sticking them into the ink so that they can't get out. And they might send friends. And they might come back, but it's a way to give us reprieve, if only for a moment, our creativity starts to overflow. Tiptoe outside and dance under stars, as euphoric a sensation as dogs chasing cars, so far away reaching for this beautiful sky's scars. All washes away in these torrential rains, no more worrying about bloody dirt stains. Wounds leaking flow to daisies, ground veins, they bloom like the seeping words of pain. Just again, that really reinforces the idea of the freedom that night can have, especially if you have agoraphobia. When the world is kind of quiet and nobody's around, you're able to go out and be and experience and have these emotions. And from there, that beauty can blossom. Poetry can pull forth in those red, white, pink, purple, a land ocean of color, field of glory, the radical difference of life adored, those light rays of so many wavelengths hit inner core, remind the author of the minuscule moments he lived for. That one I love. 2 thoughts on it. The mantis shrimp sees wavelengths that humans do not. And it's a fun thing to kind of ruminate on because in an ocean of color, how many colors do we miss because we simply cannot see them? That being said, I had a very poignant conversation with my sister the other day, because when she was giving birth to my second niece, they put an IV in her arm with a slightly larger needle. And nobody knows this except her. Nobody pays attention to it except her. But there is a small round scar on her arm now from the day that she birthed my niece. It is a scar that nobody's going to know. Even her husband is not even going to know the relevance of it. It's just a piece of her now. It is a piece of her that remembers the day she labored for her second daughter. There's a scar that will live with her for the rest of her life. And when she dies, that memory too decays. And in many ways, this verse reminds me of that. Those moments that we live for, those times when we look at our hands and we see a scar that's been a part of us for so long, but we forgot about it. We forgot about the memory, and yet when it's there, it still comes back. In so many ways, our poetry, our life, and our memory are like that, those wavelengths that we've forgotten how to see until just the right light hits them. And we are reminded, mental warriors dressed in ironclad submarines muster on multiple souls. Anger of hurtful fiends, still all arrows point to time as a solution to sanguine poets' thoughts embossed from situations green. We all have our demons that we struggle with. We all have our vices and our friends and our fiends and foes who are willing to come alongside us for better or for worse. They're all there, ready. And yet, as a poet, so often we put our words and our blood into our writing, and then we pick at it, we preen it to try and make it look suitable, because sometimes when we pen from the heart and from the soul, we're not quite sure that our words are quite right, that they're not quite as effective, or perhaps it is too exposing of something that we are going through. And so we preen and we pick and we make it perfect so that we don't show too much, but we still get that feeling, that thought down. And then the reminder, I may not be a peacock, golden eagle, cardinal, or raven, but these wings feel the wind and know all things will mend. This understanding that no matter where you've come from, a rooster, chicken, a peacock, a golden eagle, a cardinal, a raven, there's still that beauty of the knowledge of flight. There's still value in it. There's still an understanding that broken bones mend, that wounds heal. We just have to give them the opportunity to. Just as we have to give the opportunity to the rooster to show its beauty. I think this is a truly stunning, poignant, and possibly deeply exposing piece that lets us see into your thought process, possibly personal demons, and even things that you've gone through in your own way. Perhaps the fear that your words will not be good enough when you compare them to Robert Frost or Shakespeare or any great writer. There's always that fear that we won't stand the test of time, the fear that we will be lost or be deemed unworthy. And yet there is this reminder that you are enough. And sometimes we just have to remind ourselves of that. So, stunning. Thank you, Versus, for sharing this, truly.
Thank you for the wonderful comment. It was quite in-depth, and I appreciate it very much.
Absolutely. A good poem deserves a good comment. That's my philosophy. So, do you want to talk about your piece at all? I mean, we've got the time. You're fully welcome to.
I feel it's always egotistical to like talk about a piece. You like, oh yeah, and then this is when I did this, and but you hit on a lot of the points of what I created, and that second stanza is probably the most personal out of any of them, relating to an actual event that happened. So it was interesting to hear from your point of view with your daughter as well, like what happened. So it was insightful. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Truly, this is a stunning rite, and just thank you for sharing even your vulnerability, because sometimes there are those traumatic events that just stick with us. So, where would you like to take us to next? Since I don't think we have home. Let me check. I don't think we have. No, we still don't have any other guests. So where do you want to take us next?
I'm sure we'll be fine, just the two of us.
Okay.
We can make it if we try, just the two of us.
I like it.
So, if you don't mind giving the next poem up a read, we'll continue on.
Absolutely. All right, this one is going to be Okanagan in Autumn by Faziana. Pumpkin Castle leads to a harvest market, autumn's bounty, shades of orange and green, squash in every shape, wafting smell of cinnamon apple cider, apples freshly picked, varieties, salted caramel dips, juices and jams, hand-pressed next to the playground filled with laughter, and the soft bleating of goats whose cheese melted on warm bread will be savored by families on the orchard train ride as the sun sets. On the fiery-tipped tangerine leaves, the moon peeking from behind the mountain, reflecting on the lake, visible beyond the cityscape from the Pumpkin Castle's view, Okanagan in Autumn by Moonlight. End poem. Oh my God. I got to read this earlier, and all the happy feels, and I'm just so ecstatic by this. But Versus, would you mind starting us off with a comment?
Absolutely, and a beautiful read by you. Thank you for reading it. I like how this captures so many different aspects of fall while maintaining not like a story, what's the term for it, but like making a picture with words. I'm sure that there's like a phrase for it where it's a full moment in time. It's not just like images, but it's all the sights and smells.
Snapshot.
It's like a little snapshot movie of just the start of autumn here in Okanagan. I tried to look that up to see if I was missing like that being a reference to a specific phrase, because it kind of reminds me of Japanese a little bit, and it made me think of, oh, I always forget the name of it, Tsukurogi, where the cracks are filled with gold, Tsukuryoki or something like that.
I know what you're talking about, where they mend pottery with gold because the flaws are deemed as beauty.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it reminded me of that, but Okanagan is a place, it seems like. That's what my searches came up with. So I was like, oh, okay. So I think it's a lake, or it's a place that has a lake. So when I reread it, for me, it was this literally a gigantic pumpkin that you could stand in the moonlight by a lake, which is in of itself a great fall image. So, yeah, all of it was just so nice to hear and read, and it brings on all of the fun emotions of fall for me. So.
That was a great comment, Versus. I believe so. Faze lives in Canada, and so I think this is the Okanagan Lake in Canada. But you're right, it does offer this beautiful snapshot of fall in this. For me, it reminded me of pumpkin patches, which are like probably my favorite thing about fall. And I love taking my kids to them, but I love going to corn mazes and pumpkin patches. And there's one when I was a kid, and this actually reminded me of it, but there was this pumpkin patch that I'd go to as a kid that you would have to do a hayride into the pumpkin patch. And then, of course, a hayride to the actual pumpkin patch. But the gate that you would go to, you'd go into, like, this whole little, like, farm thing. And they'd have, like, face painting. They had this barn you could walk through that in each stall, there was a different scene with scarecrows with pumpkins as heads, and that they would, like, paint up so that they each had, like, different scenes. So, like, one year it was, like, Bert and Ernie, and it might be the Power Rangers, or it could just be, like, a goofy little farm scene. But I remember this as a kid, because you'd have, like, a little kid's corn maze or hay maze that you could go through, and you had little fun things that you could do, and you had the smells of, like, the fresh cider and the warm apples on the trees, because the sun would get just hot enough during the day to heat those apples, and fruit, when it's ripe, just permeates the air with its smell. And so you'd have that with the fresh cider or the hot cocoa, and, you know, just all the beauty and the fun that came with it. Corn everywhere. Fresh popcorn. And this kind of reminds me of that. This reminds me of, like, a fall market or a pumpkin patch where she's getting to go and see all the things that people have made or that she can buy, because of course all the summer berries at this point have to be preserved. So you have those juices and you have those jams and you have the dipped apples and you have the pies. If you make an apple pie, you need to use at least 3 different types of apples, because different apples add different things to pies. So you might want to have, like, a Granny Smith, because even though it's tart, it holds its like texture a little better. And then you can have, like, a Golden or a Granny Smith apple, which is going to be sweeter and softer. And you can have, like, a green apple, which is going to be like, oh goodness, the first one I mentioned, where they're a little bit more sour, but you add these different apples into a pie because they all cook different and they taste different. And so this, when she says a sampling of 6 varieties, it reminds me kind of like baking a pie, and then, you know, maybe you have a few extra. So you take, like, a Red Delicious and you dip it into some salted caramel. So you have a candied apple, and the joy of the kids being outside in their last few days of play before it gets too cold to play on the playground. And of course the petting zoo that usually seems to follow these kind of things, and warm bread, and just, it's this beautiful full sensory experience that she's provided that also is pulling me back to memories of my own, which just really enhanced the poem, because I've never been in Okanagan in the fall. I've never been to this place. And yet here I am thinking of hay castles. There's a pumpkin patch that has opened up by my parents, Middleton Farms, and they have this giant hay castle with pumpkins all over it that light up at night, which is just amazing. But it reminds me of those things, and it makes me excited. One of the reasons I love fall, I get to let my kids do all of this stuff now. And so I think this is just beautiful, because it takes our own memories. It's vague enough that I can have my own memories that it enhances. And that even though I haven't been to Okanagan in the fall, I have experienced some of these things. And so they are reanimated with this piece, and it just sticks with you in such a beautiful way. So I think it's just a stunning write, and it's just, oh, I'm just giddy over it. So, yeah. And we do have another caller, so I'm going to check on this real quick. Area code 807, who are we speaking with?
Hi there. I haven't called in a while. It's Rob, Robbie's Poetry.
Oh, hey, how are you?
Not too bad. I've been wanting to call in back in for a while, start participating more. And, well, I figured now is as good a time as any. You've got your contest going, and yeah, I heard you had, it was just the two of you there. So I figured, yeah, perfect time to call in.
I love it. I love it. Hey, and if I have to bribe you with a contest to get you to call in, I'm totally willing to do that. So I'm glad
you didn't
you're
have
here.
To,
Thanks for calling.
You didn't have to bribe me, but it was just, I was thinking about like a few days ago, I should start calling in and participating more. And then, you know, poof, the contest comes up. I was like, oh, there you go. It was meant to be.
It was your sign. Yeah.
Yeah, it was
so
my sign.
So did you get a chance to hear or read Faze's poem?
Yeah, I just went into the Okanagan in autumn, right?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I just read over it, and I got that pleasant sort of sensory experience from it. You know, I think fall, you know, all the autumn colors and that, they especially lend themselves to that, the whole sensory thing that we get because of all the lush colors and you can kind of feel the crisp autumn air and all of that. There's that kind of feeling of that we get in the fall of, you know, a little bit of the warmth. It's not like winter where, you know, we're huddled by the fireplace, but there's a little bit of that feeling of where it says melted on warm bread. And so it's that feeling a little bit of, you know, having a little bit of the warmth in that that cool fall air, which I've always found to be a pleasant, you know, when you have that, it's cool, but it's not cold. And then you've got a little bit of warmth to it, you know, like a warm jacket, some warm food.
Yeah, and I love that you even brought the warmth into it, because so often we think in sensory of like the cold air and the smells and the warm bread, but even like the idea of that warm jacket, you know, the idea of kids not getting to play because right now they have a light jacket to keep them just warm enough, but soon those heavy jackets are going to come and it's going to be way too cold. I love that you really highlighted even that, because it is such a small thing and yet it's so telling for the time of year. I always say you can tell fall is here because the light turns golden. And that's always kind of like my thing, but you're right. Even that slight chill in the air, just enough to need a light jacket, is kind of that telltale sign of how the days are becoming shorter and colder, and soon we're going to be bundling up a little more. So,
well, you were mentioning Ephesian is Canadian. Was that, did I hear correctly?
Yes.
Or? Yeah,
yes.
And that's, I think when you're Canadian, that awareness is brought into things a little more, because like I used to think that I hated the fall, but I don't. It's just I hate that it's a reminder of that we're going to get our bone-chilling winter, because where I am, it literally goes like minus 40 degrees Celsius or lower. And so when I know, that's a whole other level. And so I don't know if that played into her poem, but I think when you're a Canadian and you have that other season coming after fall, I think it gives you even more of an awareness that, well, you know, it's a light jacket now, but you know what? It's going to go beyond the light jacket in a month after that, so.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I love that, though, because you're right. Like, I, you know, living where I've lived in the United States, it's never been really like a negative 40. I mean, I lived in Spokane, Washington for a bit, and there was like a winter there where it was like maybe negative 12, and you had to wear a mask when you went outside and follow a rope. I was in university, so you'd have to follow a rope because you'd put them, if you didn't have a mask on, your eyelids basically froze together, your eyelashes did. So I appreciate that, because there are a lot of places in the United States that don't experience that, and so sometimes we don't, like my favorite house season is in fact winter, because I love the bitter cold. I love the snow. I just, everything about winter I love. But for a lot of people, it is this hard, dark, dangerous time. I think of like Alaska, North Pole Alaska, which is just pitch black. You know, it's nighttime for so long. And I'm sure people don't necessarily, there's a lot of people who wouldn't enjoy that and don't want to be around that. And don't want to be around the cold. And so I love how you even mentioned that it is that reminder of like what is to come, a light jacket now, but something so much colder and worse later, because that could play into it. So thank you for sharing that, Robbie. I really love that.
You bet.
Inverses, what do you think? I know you commented on the piece, but Robbie offered some amazing insights. Did you have anything you wanted to add?
I mean, I'm just laughing because in Vegas, people freak out when it starts to turn like 40 degrees Fahrenheit. So anything negative, I'm sure would be like eye-popping for them.
Oh, God. You remind me, I did. Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to talk over you versus finish. Please finish.
Oh, I was just saying that negative 40 would definitely blow people's minds where I come from.
I love it. I lived in Texas for a bit because I've gotten to live all over the place. But I lived in Texas for a bit, and I was auditing a city, and I remember. Usually the firm was like, if schools close down, we close down. But there was a snow warning in the forecast, and it did snow. And so everything shut down. But I was like, I'm still going to go to the city and audit it because they're going to be there. The snow that we had, none of the roads had any snow on them. There was maybe like a 5-inch wide by foot long strip of snow that was like it had dusted, it had snowed, but like immediately melted, and just it was high enough held up by the grass blades to not die. And coming from the Northwest, yes, Northwest. I'm like losing my mind today, guys. Coming from the Northwest, the Pacific Northwest, I knew what snow was. I'd been through snow. And so to see Texas pretty much shut down because like the threat of snow, they saw a snowflake, it kind of made me giggle. So I love your comment on that versus because I just remember like seeing like a puddle and it was like 34 degrees and there was a puddle of water where there once the schools were shut down. And I was like, yes, Texas, they saw a snowflake. It's just, again, that commentary on the different places and how we experience seasons differently. And again, highlighting back to what Robbie said, how, you know, for me, winter is this beautiful time, but there are definitely places where winter is not something to be looked forward to because it comes with so much more. For me, I just, with Washington getting set on fire as well as Oregon and California, you know, summer's never been a great time and it's just getting worse. But then, of course, there's other people who love that time of the year because it is more enjoyable than what they might get to experience in winter. So it's just a beautiful reminder of how perspective can be so different based upon where you are and where you come from and the way in which we pass through these seasons. It gives us a new appreciation to look at them, at least for me, this new appreciation to reflect on them. And start to see the beauty that others might not see rather than just stick with my winter's the best with fall falling close. So thank you guys. I love those thoughts. I appreciate it. Thank you.
You bet.
And versus, where do you want to take us now?
Just another quick thing. I thought it was hilarious that Robbie wouldn't even say winter. It was that season that comes after fall.
The season that shall not be named.
Exactly.
Right. And to take advantage of the fact that we got you, Robbie, if you don't mind reading the next poem I just posted.
Yeah. Oh, I just got to refresh here. My chat, yeah. I have to refresh my chat every once in a while, otherwise the latest comment doesn't come up. Here we go. Feelings of autumn. Wind blowing in my face, barely I know. I need space within scars and dead things falling out from angels' wings. They perish the holy church, the priests of worry crunch, as the pumpkins get into life and ghosts come alive. The depth of illusion is dying as long as we keep falling apart. The beautiful autumn comes, but trees left with our heart.
Beautiful read, Robbie. Thank you so much for that. And a wonderful write by Hugo Jepson. Versus, would you start us off with a comment?
For sure. I like how this goes, and Robbie had mentioned similar, like the air of autumn is kind of one of those first things that you feel, the chill of it, but it also starts to blow more. And so this poem goes into that, like right off the bat with the wind blowing in their face. And it almost seems like this has that dualistic thread between a relationship and how autumn comes about. And I don't know if I have the full like metaphor down in my head, but with that second line, barely I know I need space. It kind of goes into maybe the like the Halloween side of things as the pumpkins get into life and ghosts come alive, where it's, you know, falls also the time of the spooky, scary skeletons coming out and inhabiting, you know, the streets. So it rides the metaphor really well, and it has all this like language that continually brings you back to that relationship side of it. The depth of illusion is dying as long as we keep falling apart. But you can also see it in the trees and like the leaves falling down. And so I think the way that this was interwoven really well. It's done.
That was an awesome comment. Unfortunately, I did miss part of it because my doppelganger decided to make an appearance. But what particularly stuck with me is how you were mentioning that you didn't think that you got the full metaphor. But you were mentioning kind of like Halloween when the ghosts and the ghouls kind of come out. And I think that's actually really poignant in this piece because originally Halloween was Samhain. And before the church kind of took over the holiday, which has happened a lot. But what's interesting about that is that originally turnips were carved, not pumpkins. And people would put on masks and ghouls to prevent the ghosts and the demons that were coming through because the veil was thinner from taking them and their souls and all that. So it was a way to hide. Obviously, that kind of being the pinnacle on Halloween. And so I love that because there is almost this throwback to the original lore. You know, here we have the church, here we have the priests, the idea of life and beauty, and as the leaves die and as they fall, you can hear the worrying crunch of that time of the year coming when the veil is thinner and we need to protect ourselves. And in those moments, that's when those pumpkins come to life, because in the traditional fashion of carving turnips, now we carve these pumpkins to light, to life, to scare away these things. And the ghosts begin to come out and to wander. And in that moment, we start to see the illusion of life being there. And I was actually having this conversation with my sister the other day because, lo and behold, I'm Gothic. I have been since before emos were around, and I call myself Victorian Goth because I like satin and lace and silk. And one thing that's really poignant in the Victorian era is that they were quite aware, other than spiritualism really kind of coming out and we start seeing people trying to have seances, there really was this understanding that life and death are knitted together, that the two reflect each other in so many ways. Tuberculosis being fairly rampant in the Victorian era would look like yew berries, which ironically were part of the treatment to help kind of soothe the symptoms of tuberculosis. So in John Keats' Ode to Melancholy, which was written as he was dying, he speaks of yew berries as a rosary, which include the color of the blood that you sat up, the shape of the blood droplets, the rosary beads, and then, of course, the healing remedies of yew berries in the aid of tuberculosis. And so, to me, when they speak of the depth of illusion dying as long as we keep falling apart. It's throwing back to that reality that life reflects death, that those two are woven together, that we cannot escape the two. And so here is this reminder. And we begin to understand, too, that when we see things fall apart, that death does not have to be the end. It can kind of be that new chapter, be it a physical death. I mean, obviously, physical death is kind of hard to come back from. But even like a death of a relationship or a job or a career, those don't have to be the end. There's still that opportunity to hibernate and come back as something new and something better, or just to try again. And therefore, we leave our hearts with those trees, because the trees do not die. The trees stay through the winter. They grow new leaves. And it's an idea of focusing upon the things which are permanent and not the impermanence of beauty that we so often hold to these high standards. I think this is just a really beautifully setting piece that not only just weaves together old lore with possibly even some religious history, but it also does have that reminder of almost don't give up, because things don't always have to end. Sometimes they just need to sleep. It's just a really beautiful, beautiful night. And Robbie, what did you think having read it?
Well, the feeling I got was that it's a more internalized, metaphysical sort of version of how we feel in the fall about change coming and, you know, sort of the hibernating feel, and that because of lines like, but trees left with our hearts, and falling out from angels' wings. So it feels, it feels more internalized compared to the usual autumn poems. And so it's kind of like a fall time of the soul. As cheesy as that might sound, but I got that bit of a Halloween feel to it, because of how it says, as the pumpkins get into life and ghosts come alive.
I love that, and I don't think that's cheesy, a falling of the soul. I don't think that's cheesy at all, because I do think that we as humans kind of grow and evolve, and sometimes we do just have a falling of the soul, and it's kind of like we're just like, oh, this is going on. You know, I think that's really poignant. And sometimes even that falling of the soul is just that really, it can be those moments in which we start to really see the need for change. Perhaps it's in, you know, shifting our colors, or perhaps it's in shedding personal character traits or old ways of thinking. I think that was just really beautiful and definitely not cheesy at all. Thank you for that, Robbie. I appreciated it. And where would you? Oh, go ahead, Robbie. No, go ahead, please.
Oh, I was just gonna say, very briefly. It's just funny that came up, because today I was just talking about how I changed my name in my 20s from, not legally, but Robert to Robbie. I went with Robbie instead of Robert, because it just sounded more playful, and I made a whole slew of changes around my early 20s. And at that point, I said, okay, I'm doing all these changes. I'm calling myself Robbie, not Robert. And now it's to the point where if I hear Robert, like, I only use it for business. Like, if people ask, what do you want me to call you? I say Rob, you know, Rob or Robbie. Like, when I hear Robert, All I hear is everything that's attached with that name that I was trying to get rid of. So it's like you're talking about that, you know, time to change sort of a thing, eh? And it's just, I was just talking about that today. So it's kind of, I thought it was apt that it came up today.
Well, and I love that you share that too, because, so this is just my personal experience that I had when I first started getting really into the show. A few people tried to shorten my name to Vicky. And I had to be like, I actually hate being called Vicky. I grew up with a Vicky, and I don't like to be associated with her. And so I always went by Tori because, you know, It's the only other option. And so, you know, I've actually always preferred my full name, Victoria. I just think it's a beautiful name and I like it. And as I've gotten older, I've stuck more to Victoria, but as I've become more into the show, it did kind of, people started calling me Vicky, and now people are just calling me Vix, and I'm like, I can live with Vix. But it is that really beautiful way in which even the way that we connect to our name can change. And I actually saw with another friend, she used to go by Alex all the time, and now she likes to go by her full name, Alexandria. And sometimes it is even just that name change, the way in which we respond to it and how we associate with it. That mental shift comes with it, and it denotes how we are changing as a person. So I think that's actually a really powerful comment, Robbie, because, you know, Robert was probably good name for a while there, or, you know, even as a kid, Victoria, what meant I was in trouble. But now it's kind of like this beautiful acceptance of who I am now, and that could change in time. But I think that's powerful because it is this physical representation, if you will, that shows how we change and how we grow, and how even something so small, quote unquote small, as a name.
I know someone who's a Vicky, and I really don't want to talk with them. And so I was laughing to myself, like, I have absolutely no problems not calling you Vicky because I don't want to think for that person.
I still. Okay, and that's the thing, is like, I still am like, oh, I'm still not really a Vicky, but I'm definitely Victoria, and I'm okay with being called Vic. But it's just funny. There are those names that we just have those negative associations with. And so, So don't worry. I'll call you Robbie. You won't call me Vicky. We'll be golden. It'll be good. Right? All right. Verses, where do you want to take us?
All right. I will take us to the next poem, and I will give it a read. This is Days of Autumn by Poetic Picasso. By the Brunia Spear, a cobalt bolt is fastened, so small and so solitary, as a haunting reminder, a time when a man spent his morning sunshine alone, under the dry lemon leaves and the brittle topaz branches. The leaves fall gradually upon the gentle ripples of tiny shades of yellow within the Marigold River. If he stares into the water, he would see the reflection of his face in its sorrow with buttercups he throws. Thus, the days of autumn are accompanied suddenly by the daffodil color alive upon the fresh new ripples. The color of a new hope. And boom.
Oh, that was a beautiful read, Verses, and such a stunning write by Poetic Picasso. I think what I really appreciate about him is that so many times we will read poetry that says, oh, the leaves are changing colors, because they are. It's an apt description of the time. The leaves are changing colors. But he didn't focus on the color change of the leaves. He focused on the color change of the background. And I liked even, you know, by the Brunius Pier, because I think he's referencing the color. I don't think there's actually a word Brunius. So if I just may not know it. So if you guys know it, let me know. But I think that he's saying the brown pier. And I think that's important because when you think of like, sun-bleached piers, they tend to actually be white. And so then all of a sudden the autumn comes and it's starting to get damp and you might get a little bit more rain or things are a little darker. So the water that gets on them throughout the day and night doesn't evaporate. And so the pier does become browner and darker. And then the cobalt boats, we have the dry lemon leaves, so yellowing, the brittle topaz branches, the shades of yellow, and the marigolds, because marigolds are those beautiful, like, yellow and orange flowers, the buttercups that he's throwing, and even the sadness, because sometimes there is a sadness in the fall. Sometimes it is kind of that moment when you can, especially if you don't have someone to keep you warm, you start to recognize the loneliness because you're not on adventures. There's not as many things to do to distract yourself. And yet, in seeing the daffodil, in seeing the ripples and the way in which our face and our reflection can change, sometimes it can give us that idea of new hope and remind us that the winter is coming, spring is soon to follow. He paints in such a beautiful way with his words. And I always say this, but being named Poetic Picasso as his disease is name, I always think is so appropriate because he does write in these beautiful images that you can't help feel yourself in that moment, feel yourself enjoying the image that he's created and connecting with it in our own way. I think it's just stunning. And I am going to disappear for a second. My doppelganger thinks that we're boring, and so she left. Her name's probably Vicky. I get it. So I'm actually going to have to drop and then call right back. But Robbie, while I'm doing that, would you mind giving a comment?
Yeah. Well, in this one, I felt like it was almost like a personal timeline put into the framework of a fall. Because it feels like an individual story. The last line, "The Color of a New Hope," and you know, referring to one person. That, you know, if he stares into the water, he would see the reflection of his face in its sorrow. So it seems to be a very personal reflection on perhaps a specific period of time. And I enjoyed the way it was framed, especially with kind of the juxtaposition of the different flowers, and that like it had kind of related like the daffodil color alive, and that like the flowers and the plants that we usually associate with with newer things and newer hopes, it seemed to be anchored to what he was hoping would be something new.
I love that, especially how you kind of mentioned that it's this personal reflection, because I think in a lot of ways it is. And he may actually be going through a personal reflection or he may not, but it is still contrasted with those hopeful flowers, with this idea of a blooming or a bloomed bud. It's still beautiful. It still gives new hope. And it allows us sometimes to get out of that mindset of what could so easily drag us down. I think that was a really stunning comment, at least the part that I got to hear from it. And I'm so glad I got to hear that part, because I feel like in many ways it was a probing of the soul. An understanding that this is a personal moment for Frank, but at the same time, there are so many ways in which we connect with it. And even that desire that in those sad, swollen moments, to still find something to hang on to. Really beautiful comment, Robbie. Thank you. And Versus, what did you think of this?
First, I absolutely agree that Poetic Picasso and Frank, who is Frank, sorry, brings a great color palette to, like, everything that he writes, and it shows so well in this one. I did look up Brunius at the time I had, and it doesn't seem to have any other meaning besides dark brown, so it's just another to add on to the colors that is being shown here, and so even with all these beautiful colors, there's still an emotive, as Robbie was saying, kind of a timepiece. And it's almost like the difference a year can make is sort of what I thought of. Like, one year he was all solid and reflective and very internal and just depressed during fall. And he sees himself in that state. And so now, when fall comes, these colors bring happiness. It's that ability like Victoria was saying, to change the mindset from these days make me this way to them making me feel hopeful that the future will be different and change. And it's kind of got that metaphorical acceptance of change in one's life interwoven into it beautifully. And yeah, it's just a beautiful painting of a poem.
Oh, I love that. And I love even how you mentioned like the difference that a year can make, because you can have these beautiful romantic poems of walking through the fall colors. And yet this one does kind of have this contrast, the hope to the sorrow, which makes it feel like it's that timestamp of times lost, a reflection on what may have been going on just a year ago. I think that was a beautiful and stunning insight. Thank you for that, Versus. We do have about 30 minutes left. So with that, where would you like to take us?
Well, I just posted another piece up into the chat on the board, if you don't mind giving that one a read, Victoria.
Okay, but only because I like you. All right, this is Autumnal Palette by Katie Hepburn. Within lush lee, where bare grass flambeau backlit our fire, on soul's broiling eaves, memories, mine and those, de mon ami. In this moment, we maunder, moist ground, times it's tough to walk, a stone in my boot, his eyes locked upon small scopes, solar paladins, as I leant down, he gleaning the sky for ghost eyes, caught two ion-tailed stars, slam high side of mouth, nary a sound. Frisions of fear to quickening pulse, hest of human inherent illusional dust, Rubicon moment of looming sobrosa gloom, autumn's polychromatic musique, floated a tuneful terraform, fingers commingled, we meander to meadow, a paradoxical alfresco in third eye view. Come, peekaboo broom, followed by chill draft, knife-like inhale of breath, in the Viron now hedged, clouds dredged, baptismal dulge. We of us, meet half-naked coppice, calcined summer crusts craved the nightcap, souring swift re-osmo of cotton mouth skin. Each russet blade of mountain maple embraced by gentle chinook incites a reflex release of last leaves, glissading, gambooling, gliding, frolicking in air, casting the cadence around autumn's palettes of passion, her mattress of fell relatives in imperiled kiss. In her grace we lie as timber stands sleepless, assembled, circumspect, and poem. Oh, I love this. I absolutely love this. Poppy, would you mind starting us off with a comment?
Yes. I had the feeling of a bit of a tease maybe between two people and just kind of, with two people kind of rushing through an autumnscape. And, being under the sort of the stars of the autumn, like the kind of specific things you would see under the sky in autumn. And I enjoyed just like the lushness of it in terms of, well, I was impressed with the, with how much of the extensive vocabulary they had in here, because there's a lot of words in here that I haven't seen that I understand, but I haven't seen used much, like Frison and a few others, and it was used well, and it was just it ran very smoothly for me, the whole little story of it with the romance that I felt in it.
I got stuck on mute. It's my fault I got stuck on mute. I think that was a really beautiful comment, because you're right. There really is a romance to this. It's almost intimate in the way that it's been penned. And it takes us along on this journey where not only we get to have the beauty of the surroundings, but we get to see those little intimate moments between two people. So I think that was really beautiful and insightful in your words and your thoughts. Thank you, Robbie. And Versus, mm-hmm. What did you think?
First, I agree with Robbie on the vocabulary that is all throughout this, and it also intermixes a little bit of French. I mean, it's pretty simple, but de mon ami is of my love. Al fresco, I think, just means like outside or in the sunlight or something like that. But it intermixes it very well with both the vocabulary and the French. And like Robbie was saying, even if you don't immediately get what that word means, it doesn't take away from that moment being understood. So it was very well worded in that. I really liked that. Fingers commingled, we meander to meadow, a pair of disciple alfresco in third eye view. So that one's one I need to look up. Paradisiacal. I've never seen that word before. But you still get this view of, you know, them walking together hand in hand out in the open view. And even she pulls us out where we see them from like an external point of view, which is very cool to see. There's so much just beautiful imagery, and she even goes into the sounds of the chain, the terraform of everything just before the walking to the meadow. And it does use like both sight and sound to its advantage throughout to beautiful effect. And yeah, it's an interesting read, even with the like way it's all formatted. And it seems to have like those purposeful pauses or spaces to give more effect to certain words, and it all comes out to great effect. So really well done.
I just looked up paradisical, and just as I thought, it simply means of paradise, or, you know, referring to something paradise-like. And I found that, like, I'm reading a lot of Clark Ashton Smith, and I don't know if anybody's familiar with him, but he uses words in a way that, like, he'll put a word in a tense, you know, or put it almost like an action word. So you get used to seeing words put in that way, like instead of saying of paradise, it'll say paradisical, eh? And so, and I enjoy when sometimes it's put in that sort of a way, so that it kind of fits into a writing as just one word, but you see what it's referring to. Because sometimes it's a little awkward to say, you know, of paradise, or like, how do you really say that it's like paradise without being too, starting to use too many words, right?
Yeah. And I love that. And thank you, Robbie, for even looking that up and that commentary on it, because you were actually, as you were speaking, you were reminding me that when you learn a language, you kind of get those context clues. You may not fully understand a word, but you understand its meaning and its purpose based upon the context in which it's given. And so kind of like what both you were speaking about, Robbie, and what Versus is speaking about, we have those context clues. We may not fully understand, you know, be it French or a word that they use. Polychromatic, people may not recognize that word, but obviously it means multiple colors. It's a descriptor of the varying colors of fall, of autumn, and the leaves. So she's used these beautiful words with enough context clues that even if you don't have a $5 vocabulary across the board, even if you're only getting there, even if you never get there, you still kind of grasp what it is, because you're right, we could say things 25 ways to Sunday, but we have this one word that we know just enough about that we can kind of piece together what's going on. So thank you for that, Robbie, not just for looking it up, but also kind of that in-depth thought of why to use a word such as that, even if it is a little odd or difficult to use, because sometimes that's exactly what the poem means. Without...
Well, like as I say, the when you read Clark Ashton, you get used to it, and it's funny. He read the dictionary 2 or 3 times over, I think, and you could tell. Like you have when you read his stuff, and I'm sure there's other writers out there like that. You have to have your dictionary out beside you. But it's a good education, because by the time you're done reading all their work, your vocabulary is increased like 50%.
That's awesome. But it definitely does give you some work. But thank you for that, because again, it shows the beauty of continued growth and continued learning. And sometimes it is just the context clues, and sometimes you dig out a dictionary or a thesaurus. But thank you for that, both of you. Beautiful comment and a beautiful commentary. I think what I really loved about it is that, again, that she has not just the sensory feel. We have obviously a lot of visuals, but there is still that romanticness. I mean, how fun is it to hold a hand when the winter is getting a little bit chilly? Perhaps you're even wearing mittens, so it's a little bit more awkward and you have to hold on just a little tighter because your fingers don't fit together the same way. I think what really, excuse me, my body is trying to yawn because it's getting late and I need coffee. But I think what really stuck with me was, I'm trying to find it real quick, the knife-like inhale. There it is. Come peekaboo broom, followed by chill draft, knife-like inhale of breath. I think environ now hedge, cloud dredge, baptismal bulge. What I love about winter and fall is that inhale. Again, not negative 40, but that you go out and it's cold and it's crisp and it is like a sharp knife. In Russia, they historically would put babies out into the cold because they believed that being out there helped with their like immune system and their tolerance to the cold, and would make them more suitable for that. But it actually has shown to have done quite a few good things, because even if you have a cold, if you go out in the winter and you inhale that cold air, it hits you in such a way, it kind of just tightens things up. It is like a knife. And this kind of reminds me of that. Even a polar bear swim, jumping into that cold water, or even a river in early summer, you have that colder water, and it is almost knife-like, and it makes you breathe, and it gives you a moment of pause where you're just like, and you're trying to catch your breath. I love that, because it is so much like a knife as you breathe in, and it gives you an understanding of how cold it is, which makes the idea of being half naked with your lover, perhaps in some sheets, or near a fire, that much more enticing, be it if you're rolling around in them or just being close to each other to share the warmth. I think it's such a stunning idea. She beautifully contrasted what the fall is like to the warmth of the one that you love, and the warmth that you get from being near the one that you love, and how in the cold we may want to draw closer to those that we love. It really felt pulled in almost. And I think in that way, it was so beautifully effective. Beautiful words, beautiful imagery. And yet in this, I can feel the cold and the warmth, and how you can feel that cold at your back as you're so close, tied up in a blanket next to your lover. just a stunning piece that's really fun to kind of ruminate on and pick through, because I think it's so complex. So, stunning right. And versus, where would you like to take us to next?
All right. I'm posting one out now, if Robbie, you don't mind giving this one a read real quick.
Okay. Okay, autumn rain. Cool water drips on fragrant leaves of turned hue, dripping below on a leafy bed.
Beautifully read. Beautiful brevity. Versus, would you start us off with a comment?
Absolutely. And with brevities, I feel like you always kind of have to take in the title and how it's structured into it as well. And this makes such a impact with so little that autumn rain is, it's almost like it goes through a journey on just five lines. So just so that I don't like tear through all of it, I'll leave some for you. But the drips on fragrant leaves of turned hue, that smell that comes when it rains and the leaves are, you know, some of them are dying and some of them are still alive. So, like, there's a partial, like, decomposition smell to it, a natural, like, flowery kind of decomposition smell, which, weirdly enough, will smell good, or it smells good to me, at least. So, yeah, I really like how, even within how much is there, it is still capable of touching on a few different sensations with the cool, the sight, and the smell. Really well done. Actually, even dripping, that sound.
Yeah, well, and they do have, he did use that auditory dripping. And I agree, you do have to include the title when you read brevities, especially something this compact. But I feel like you stole my comment because I was thinking of this, and I live up in the SeaTac area of Washington, and so we get rain, not as much rain as everybody thinks we do, but we do get rain, quite a bit of rain. And I think we get like 265 days of rain. Anyway, I'm digressing. During the summer or the spring when it rains, you have that petrichor. You have the ozone smell that just is rain, and you know it's going to rain. But in the fall, when you have all those fallen leaves, be it from plants, from trees, from the death and dying of the flowers bloomed over the summer, you do have that earthy smell that comes with the petrichor. And it's kind of that reminder that there's something more than just rain, that the rain now is not imbuing life into the soil, but helping to bring about the change to the next year, because you need that rain to soften the leaves. It makes it easier for the earthworms to come up and grab them and eat them, and all the critters to break them down. And same too, I love being in the rain. Rain is like snow, rain, fog are like my top three favorite types of weather. And I love even the idea of the cool water, because when you have summer rain, it's warm and it's hot and it's fun to be in, but at the same time, you feel the humidity after the fact. And yet, when you feel autumn rain, it's cool and you get that little chill in your bone, and it's a bone chill. So it's not just like put a jacket on and you'll be fine, but you kind of shiver for a bit and you want to curl up next to someone. And it's pulling you inside. And so while this is describing autumn rain, it also gives that feel of the way the cold seeps into our core and how there's that changing of hue and how there's a changing of life and a changing of season, and that no longer is the rain finding bed upon the ground, but now it finds bed upon the leaves that have covered the ground. And that's where it stays, being pulled in those little leaves. I think it's just stunning, and that it seeps into the mind in deeper ways than just surface level. Really, really fantastic, right? And Robbie, having read it, what did you think?
Well, one thing I enjoy about this kind of shorter poem is when it really focuses on one moment of describing something, you know, through all the senses. And partly I enjoy that because I'm a huge, huge Wordsworth fan. And I love his concept, I adore it actually, of spots of time. And spots of time are basically these perfect little moments of time, those little snapshots, you know. And it kind of, and to me, I can't remember if he had said that about them, but to me, like a spot in time like that can be unraveled into something like almost infinite. Like if you just keep digging into it, like, you know, in this case, like if you took that moment of time, you could think about the exact temperature of the water, and with the leaves, like I even took a picture of a leaf today with the water drops on them because they act like a magnifying glass, right? And it's such a beautiful thing to see. So you can think of that, like how is that little bit of water on the leaf, how is it interacting with that? And so that's one of those, that's the type of thing I enjoy about this sort of brevity when it's written well, is that you can, if you want to, you can really dig into all the little details that are potentially hidden underneath. And it's just a beautiful concept to me, all around, the whole idea of a spot in time, and just that little snapshot of something to look at. I love that.
And I love even, sorry, didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying again, I love Wordsworth.
Yeah, hey, he's a good one to love. Cannot blame you there. And I love even what you said is that, you know, in those specific moments, you can remember what all these things feel like and hear like or sound like, taste like, smell like, because it is that pinpoint moment. And even the idea of a drop, the way that it magnifies and flips kind of the world, it is that really beautiful capturing of how you can pinpoint that, you know, between the magnifying glass of the raindrop, pinpointing a moment in history. Because you're right, if we stop and we really think about our memories of our strong moments, we can pinpoint those. We can remember to the extent that it almost touches each of our senses. I think that was a really beautiful and insightful comment. So I love it. You're bringing some great stuff to the show, Robbie. You haven't been calling in for a while, but you definitely do need to make it a new habit.
Yeah,
bring it back.
It's one of the side effects of, you know, of COVID. It gets frustrating. You know, I won't go on too long about it, but like for 2.5 months too, my math just tanked. I was just going, chugging along, and I just burnt out. And,
yeah,
you know, like I was saying in chat, I had to do curbside pickup at work for a while, and that was just a nightmare beyond words to work that. But
yeah.
I'm finally getting my gusto back again. I've been starting to do my math, and I think getting the violin was a little part of it, getting that boost and talking to a couple of friends that I haven't seen in a long time again. So, yeah.
Well,
but
I'm glad
sure everybody's
glad
going through that.
But, yes. You know, we are all in the same storm. Not everybody's on the same boat. But I'm glad that you are getting your pizzazz back. And even if it is a small thing of a violin or talking with friends or doing your math, you know, it is something that is beautiful to have, and I'm thankful that you are, even in a small way, coming back, because really, you've just brought some really beautiful delights and insights to the show. So I appreciate you for that.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And so with that, we've got about 9 minutes left. So what do you think, Versus? One more poem and then wrap it up with a few announcements?
Yeah, we should be able to. The one I'm looking at looks pretty brief, fairly brief.
Fairly brief. Okay. Where are you going to take it?
All right. I'll go ahead and give it a read to make it quick. This is Autumn Visitor by Dooley Buck. An autumn visitor, an unsweetened guest, tangy, opaque cider, warming up winter to further feast upon this moment in your palate's life to carve out blessings and to break bread in traditional peace. End poem.
Oh, that was a beautiful read, Versus. Thank you. And such a wonderful write by Julie. I think what I really love about this is that so often we focus on fall and autumn as the season, and this is focusing on the feel of the season. Because, yes, we do have Halloween. I mean, if you're like me and you love Halloween, your Halloween stuff may already be up. But ultimately, it comes for Halloween, fall remains. And that's when we get to have the joys of Thanksgiving. I know Canada celebrates Thanksgiving, definitely different from the United States. The United States has Thanksgiving. But even just the idea of gathering and being together and enjoying the changing colors, enjoying the community and the warmth and the way that we're pulled inside rather than off on adventures doing things. The friendsgiving that people do, the way that communities come together, this piece to me really kind of captures it. It feels like a feast. It feels like an invitation to come and to dine and to take a moment to carve out a piece of turkey and to smell the baked bread and wish blessings upon our friends as we feast upon the harvest of the year so that we might rest and be prepared for the new one to come. I think it's just, it's really beautiful in its simplicity, and it has such a warm, open feeling that it invites us in to sit and enjoy and appreciate this capturing of a moment. Just beautiful. And Robbie, what did you think?
It definitely had the most, I think, traditionally autumnal and Thanksgiving feel to it, because it had that of all the poems tonight, it's had the most feeling of a traditional feast. And what I liked seeing, and it's something that I really have to try more often, we often try different rhyme schemes and such, but in this one there was different, like a visual thing, like where you have it in a column, and it's always interesting to read those because there's less sometimes. Yeah, usually sometimes there's some commas. Usually there's not as many, or sometimes there isn't any punctuation, so the words are kind of, I always think to myself, tumbling into each other, and I can like almost feel it when I go. Like when I read this, like an autumn visitor, an unsweetened guest, tangy, opaque cider. So it, and just because of the way it's set up visually, and because there isn't really the stops in that, you feel the words almost physically like tumbling into each other as you go like from line to line, and like one ends and it's just flowing into the other.
I love that, and I love even the way that you mentioned that it does kind of have that fluid falling of from one line into the other, because in so many ways that's how feasts can be. We fall from one plate of food and one plate of food into the next plate of food until we're in coma. But it even has like that falling feel of the leaves, the way that we understand how life has passed us by, and this is a moment almost to pause. And so I think that fluidity in the poem really does add an emphasis to the invitation to pause and to rest. So thank you for that, Robbie. I really love that. And versus having read it, what did you think?
I really like how it kind of reads with a double language, it might even be kind of like triple language, where the autumn visitor could be just like the cider, an actual person, or autumn itself being the visitor, or at least that's how I kind of view it. And so that next line, an unsweetened guest, where if you're drinking cider, as she states in the next line, you can drink apple cider, and it's typically like the more homemade ones aren't sweetened, and it's just as, you know, wonderful and a part of fall. But also like to have an unsweetened guest coming to join you for your Thanksgiving festivities. And then just, you know, fall tends to be a bit more, I mean, there's a lot of sweet treats associated with fall, but it itself is not a sweet sort of season. So it can be, of course. It's you know, cold is coming on. It's a little more bittersweet, tangy, as she said. And so it carries that, that metaphorical sense throughout the whole poem. And I really like the direct double language of blessings and to break bread in traditional peace, where obviously you break bread into pieces, but also to bring a piece maybe with this unsweetened guest who's over for Thanksgiving dinner and everything. So really well done and thought out.
That was a really awesome comment, Versus. Thank you. And I actually really love that you even mentioned that this could be fall as a visitor itself, that personification of the season. Because if you think about a visitor, they don't stay. And it is so characteristic of the of a season to not be able to stay. So I love that. Thank you for that. And just stunning comment. All right, we've only got about a minute and a half left, so I'm just going to make real quick of this little ending bit. We do have Strange Magic After Midnight this Wednesday. We are going to be looking finally at the Weaned on Poison contest that Mika and I've been hosting since we've been delayed for 2 weeks. Be sure to check out Blog Talk Radio, both for Late Night Poets and LNP After Midnight. Late Night Poets being our early show, LNP After Midnight, to see all the awesome shows that we have going on. And we do have some really awesome ones. In fact, I believe there's Dostoevsky Crime and Punishment being featured tomorrow, Late Night Poets. So after midnight, so definitely check it out. It's going to be awesome. Be sure to be posting your contest. Check out the poem contest that Phil and I have posted to find out how to interact. And as always, thank you, Versus, for being an amazing co-host. Thank you, Robbie, for calling in. And, of course, all the poets that just contribute their work to the show. You guys are what makes the show amazing. So until next week, I hope you are all safe. Good night.
Good night.
Night, all.